Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel every single Friday and Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Tonight, we have a really great show lined up for you guys. Really interesting, kind of bizarre stuff. We're going to take a step away from some of our normal content and get into some exploration of what's really out there around the world as far as religions and beliefs and philosophies and stuff like that. But before we get started, make sure to go to Facebook.com/Iron Age Jyotish and check out our friend Neil John, man. This authentic ancient Vedic astrology stuff is so super cool. I guarantee you're going to love it. So go check it out at Facebook.com/Iron Age Jyotish. And if you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. Tell him Big Dave sent you. You like the Bog, you support the Bog, you want to help us grow and help us keep the lights on, make sure to go to Patreon.com/TheBog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody. $5 all the way up to $50. And so you get a mug, you get a sticker, and most importantly, get an RSS feed so you can listen to us an audio in your car, on your commutes, at the gym, or at work at patreon.com/thebog. Or if you want to support us another way, make sure to go to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. Man, summertime is here. I know you guys want some sweet summer merch, so go over there, shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop, and pick up a muscle shirt. Get yourself a nice dress if you're a lady. Get a onesie for the baby. Or if you're part of the esoteric order of grill dads like your boy Big Dave, you can get an artisan chef apron so you can flex on your boys with your sweet bog merch over there at shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. So tonight we have the full panel. We got Tristan, we got Andre, we got Wolfman, and we're going to talk about something that is really fascinating and something that I have really started to dig into, and that is scientism and kind of the surrounding religious offshoots that have come from scientism and the furthest extreme on the spectrum, which is UFO cults, which was a phenomenon that really started in like the 60s and 70s and then going into the 80s and 90s. And, you know, we're going to talk about a lot of this stuff. We're going to talk about Scientology. We're going to talk about Heaven's Gate cult. And we're going to talk about some of these things. We're going to talk about what the commonalities between all of these things. And but leading up to it, we are going to talk about what scientism is. But before we get started, I want to tell you guys how I went onto the journey of kind of looking into what scientism is. I'm going to try to keep this short, but like maybe last year or something, I had this really weird nightmare, really creepy nightmare. The nightmare was it was like one of my kids' birthdays or something like that. And we ordered we hired this catering company. Little did we know, the catering company was not actually a catering company. It was this weird cult. It was this weird cult of people. They were like completely like multicultural and diverse. You had like Africans wearing headdresses. You had Arabs and Indians, and you had American white people. It was just like a complete mix of people. They were all wearing these camp counselor shirts, like all like these bright colored with people holding hands and stuff. And they would all break out into song. It was really, really creepy, these people. But what was really creepy about them was how dysgenic they were. They had really horrible health. Some of them had hunchbacks and like colostomy bags and like just like all kind of, they were just not of good health, these people. And when they started to cater my kid's birthday, they were bringing like trays of pond scum and worms and bugs and all of this weird stuff. And anytime you would try to criticize that, they were complete fools. They were imbeciles. They would spill things and drop things and break things, and they were just completely incompetent. And if you tried to like say, yo man, what are you doing, you're making a mess, they would have a meltdown and get really violent and nasty and act like psychopaths. Well, these people were also kind of like asexual or something. There was like no attraction between any of them. And then and they were led by this lady that looked like Bette Midler. She looked like this frizzy haired Jewish lady from New York or something like that, with the bottle cap, you know, Janis Joplin glasses, the tie dye dress with the like sneakers and a t-shirt. And they all sang together. And at the end of the day, they all got injected with this, you know, vaccine thing. They said, you got to take your vitamins to cure you of anger. And then they all went to sleep in these weird pods. And there's more to it than that. But just the aesthetic of this thing, it was kind of like this pseudo new age like Protestant McMega Church kind of vibe with the singing and everything and the unity and multiculturalism. And it was just really, really strange. It was like this bizarre mix of New Age Abrahamism with liberalism and humanism. It was like this bizarre amalgamation. And just the aesthetics from this nightmare like really stuck with me. And then I started seeing things about like what they call omniism, which is this belief that all religions are right. And I'm seeing some of these omniist groups, and they're like, they look like that. They look like some sort of psychology self-help camp where they think Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad and everybody, it's all right. Everything's good. Everybody join. And it's pretty, pretty strange. And then I started to look into what is called scientism. And we're going to get right into that. And Mr. Tristan, he's going to kind of explain to us what scientism really is and give us the timeline of it and give us a good definition. So, Mr. Tristan, can you tell us about scientism?
Well, I sure can, Dave. So first we have to define exactly what scientism is. And generally understood, it's the excessive belief in the power of scientific knowledge and techniques. Or it's frequently the view that the characteristic methods of the natural sciences are the only source of genuine factual knowledge. They believe that only science can yield any sort of knowledge about man and society. There's a type of epistemology called empiricism, which is a way of a way you collect information. And empiricism is basically knowledge you gain from your sensory perceptions, like your taste, touch, sight, smell, that sort of stuff. Everything we collect from the natural, physical, material world. Empiricism has a sort of origin that goes all the way back to Aristotle. Aristotle had his promulgations. He promulgated three different theories of logical reasoning.
Jason, cutting out.
Reasoning. All the way back in Aristotle in ancient days. But the real origins of scientism as we know today start during the Enlightenment period, and mostly as a sort of argument between the British empiricists and the continental rationalists. So back in 1620, an English man by the name of Francis Bacon was one of the first philosophers to really and stringently argue for empiricism in the European tradition. Mm-hmm. He very well influenced the English mindset towards that sort of thing. And it created a future philosophers like Locke, Berkeley, and Hume, who are generally recognized as what we call today as the British empiricists. They were the rivals and opposed thought of Descartes, Spinoza, and Leibniz, which are the continental rationalists. These people are mostly French or German, and they believe the opposite of the empiricist model. Whereas the empiricist model believes that all reasoning, all human understanding and knowledge has to be taken from sensory perception, like material basis. The rationalists believe that all human knowledge is fundamentally contained within the mind. So for instance, mm-hmm. we know that 2 + 2 = 4, and we can work this out in our heads and know that it's true without relying upon anything physical. You could be, you know, close your eyes, go to sleep, and still figure that out. So during the Enlightenment, these people were having this argument between empiricism and rationalism. And during the early 20th century, so, you know, 1910, 1920, that sort of thing, they created a movement called logical positivism, which basically just took the old empiricist model that the British were running. And this was a specifically American doctrine, and it was very, very popular amongst scientists and American elites at the time. And it held that the only sort of verifiable statement that is meaningful has to be proven through direct observation or logical proof. And this generally came into the idea of scientism as we know it today, which is the excessive belief in science, that science is the only thing that can answer any sort of meaningful question about anything, about life, morality, these sort of things. It's generally classified as an epistemological error in philosophy.
So fast forward a little bit. Well, give a shout out to my boy, our boy, Mr. Mike at Imperium Press. He just did a pretty cool, he does these like little short mini podcasts on his Telegram, the Imperium Press Telegram. And one of them, he was talking about liberalism as a religion. And he argued that, yeah, they have priests, they have prophets, they have pretty much all of the functions of religion. And it comes in with scientism. It's all that's like the epistemology. That's the epistemological warrant for their kind of whole belief in everything. Now, there's quite a few errors and stuff like that, but that is what they say they believe, right? So fast forward a little bit. How did we get from what you're talking about, the American schools of rationalism and what the textbook definition of what we call, I guess we could call, proto-scientism, and fast forward, how did it take on like a religious veneer?
So really, we have to understand here that the scientistic doctrine is, as I said, it's classified as an epistemological error. And when I say that, we have to understand that it's not just an argument in philosophy, like, you know, there's lots of philosophical arguments, people have discussions, you can have opinion on it either way, right? But scientism isn't an opinion. It's just wrong. It doesn't actually make any sort of coherent, you know, intelligible sense when you work it out. And because of this, the people generally don't understand the limits of empiricism, or they don't understand how the scientific method actually functions. So what happens is they replace this with an actual faith in science itself. So,
if I can add, it's ultimately an appeal to authority as well. I mean, the same people that will, you know, criticize religion for being, you know, you get your authority from a spiritual, you know, figure of some importance or something like that. They're just replacing a priest with a scientist or a doctor. It's literally the same style of belief. And that's why when you have people that are, you know, scientismists, I'm not really sure what you'd call them, but when they believe in science and, you know, progress to the point it's really their religion and their, like, their worldview ideology, they are just as zealous, just as dogmatic as any theistic person, as much as any trad cath, as much as any of us with, you know, our religion, as much as any, you know, Hindu scholar. They are zealous and they are devoted to their belief, and they reject non-believers as heretics. I mean, there's quite a bit of debate about, you know, quote unquote climate change, and for a myriad of reasons. But the point I'm getting at with that is that all you have to do is question it. Like, you don't even have to deny it. But if you just question, you know, the science in quotations, then, you know, you're branded heretic and ostracized and, you know, ridiculed and mocked. And it's funny, you know, like I said, the science in quotations, how often do we hear that phrase or see it? Trust the science. Do you disbelieve the science? It's like, who is this, the science? I've never heard of the God called the science.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. One of my arguments that I use with these kinds of people, they say, oh, well, you just have blind faith. It's like, all right, well, what's at the center of the earth? What do they always say? Molten core, because that's what they were taught in school. Well, now we don't, you know, we don't think it's molten core. We think it's some sort of semi-solid nickel or something like that. We don't actually know what's at the center of the earth. We just speculate. We can't know. So you just had blind faith in what's at the center of the earth. And that's like, you know, it blows their minds because they also have blind faith in these things. Well, it's not, I wouldn't say that it's blind faith. It was faith in something that they were told from some sort of institution.
See, that's actually a really good point that I want to bring up, is that one of the main arguments against the empirical model of reality is that there is no way for humans to ascertain perfect philosophical knowledge about anything at all, even very simple things. Because there's always a chance that our perceptions are wrong, or the way in which we think about things are skewed and we're perceiving everything incorrectly. So in order to have any sort of belief in anything, you require a leap of faith to understand that either the human mind is rationally correct, or the human mind or the human sensory perceptions are accurately deducing reality. So all of philosophy fundamentally starts from a leap of faith that makes everything else effectively equal after that.
Well, I think you're hitting a larger point too, in the sense that I would say that the root of like actual theology and like religious belief is philosophy, whereas the root of scientism is, you know, rationality. And I think that rationality, frankly, is a lot easier for dumb people to get. Like, you know, you can show anyone like 2 + 2 = 4 and most people are going to get that. But a lot of higher like philosophical concepts and theistic concepts, like you can explain it to someone all day and at the end of that day, they'll just blink at you and cock their head and be like, what? So I think the fact that because there's a higher barrier for entry into that kind of thinking, it almost kind of creates that legion of the midwit sort of thing where it's like, because most people can, with enough training and reinforcement, can reasonably understand a lot of basic physical scientific concepts. They have it drilled into their head and repeat it like it's a doctrine, like it's a dogma, the same as any prayer or galder or anything like that. And so they arrive at this place where, like I said before, they've replaced a priest with, you know, a doctor or a scholar or something like that. So they're in a place where they can't really challenge your theism because they're not really trained in philosophy. All they know is how to ridicule you and repeat their own kind of materialistic conclusions, which, I mean, doesn't play to their advantage, and it doesn't really do anyone any good because they're basically, like I said, Legion of Midwit tier, kind of sticking their heads in the sand and saying, like, you know, because I don't understand this higher concept, you know, it's not real. And because of that, because of its grounding in science and math and academia and stuff, they point to it and say, like, see, there's the authority. Like, I don't understand philosophy, but I do understand the basics of math. Ergo, this worldview is correct and yours is wrong. Does that make sense?
Well, see, that even goes a little further here, because I think, especially in American society, I can't really speak for European schooling, but we really don't receive any sort of philosophical education whatsoever in American schools. We do receive scientific education. It's not particularly good, but we do understand the basics of it as children. Because of this, I think it's sort of created the situation where not only do people not realize that they're making a philosophical point, they don't actually understand what philosophy is to begin with.
Yeah.
And also there's a problem in science where science has advanced now to the point where it's so complicated that even scientists themselves, like a nuclear physicist, can't keep track of all of the different changes and updates in his own field of study, let alone all of the different sciences from all the other fields. So it's created a situation in which everyone has had to sub-specialize very, very distinctly and just trust that whoever is the expert in that topic knows what he's talking about.
And that's that appeal to authority again. It's like, oh, do you have – it's like the citation thing. The eternal midwit demands a citation for common sense because, well, how could you possibly arrive at that conclusion unless someone with a doctorate told you?
Like, so – now that we've taken a look at what scientism is, it's not that and how it operates as, you know, as we're talking about, as our friend Mike talks about, that scientism and liberalism and humanism have taken on the structure and the behavior of religious institutions. It's not that far of a jump to then look at how these things evolve, and they really take on religious beliefs and stuff like that when we get into like these UFO cults. I believe Tristan mentioned earlier about climate change. You know, climate change is something that is found all over the place in these scientism cults and these UFO cults. These themes that of progressivism and liberalism and humanism are found in all of these UFO cults and all of these scientism cults, whether we're talking about Scientology, whether we're talking about Heaven's Gate, whether we're talking about Unarius, Raelianism, Netherius, even Mormonism, which I would argue is the proto UFO cult, which was like the first UFO cult. And then you have Order of the Solar Temple, and then all of this, going all the way to stuff like esoteric Hitlerism, which is effectively a UFO cult. You get into all of these kinds of things, and there's commonalities between all of them, which I'm gonna wrap up with. But speaking of and going, we're gonna go right into talking about some of these really bizarre cults, and the biggest one is Heaven's Gate, which was created by Marshall Applewhite, and I'm going to hand it over to Andre in a minute here because he did a deep dive into the Heaven's Gate cult. One of their biggest talking points was about climate change and how the earth was about to get cycled and therefore they must leave their bodies. But one thing I want to point out that there became this Frankenstein with a lot of these really kooky scientism, these kooky UFO cults. There's a syncretism between what Tristan described as scientism and then what we understand to be like Western esotericism or occultism, which has its roots in Kabbalah and Helena Blavatsky. And we can explore all of that stuff. We could go through the whole timeline about how L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons had a Thelemite butt sex ritual, how, like, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's crazy. And there's so many connections between all of this. We're going to get into it. But let's start by talking about the most famous UFO cult, which is the...
Oh, hold on, Dave. Before we do start that, I wanted to touch on exactly how we get from scientism to the beginnings of UFO cults itself.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So we got to understand here that the UFO cults really started to become a thing immediately after the end of the Second World War in 1945. So around 1949, 1950 is when the first ones that started getting mass fame started appearing. And the idea of scientism really took hold during the interwar periods between World War I and World War II, when so many people had like these traumatic sufferings and people were starving to death. They had the Great Depression, they had economic worries, they had all of these wartime concerns, and it seemed to people that the old status quo of the world had irrevocably changed, and they're very frightened about what was going to be coming next. But during this period, they kind of took the idea of science and technology as something that would create a better future going forward, because it was also the cause of much of their own worries. Like the atomic bomb dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima were very frightening to people at the time, but it also created like the science fiction of the 1950s. Everything was atomic-based. We call it the atomic age as a sort of genre. And you see that a lot in the early UFO cults, where they have this idea that somehow technology is going to create a utopian setting upon the world, or they're especially concerned with atomic bombs and warfare. You'll note as we go through all these UFO cults, they all have their origins in this, like almost a culturally traumatic aftermath of the Second and First World War.
So let's get right into the most famous and most well-known of the UFO cults, and that is the Heaven's Gate. Mr. Andre, you did a little bit of reading into Heaven's Gate. Tell us about them.
Yeah, I've done a lot of reading into the Heaven's Gate, and it's been an interest point for me for many years, actually. Because it's a very standard type of UFO cult that goes completely off the rails by the end for the obvious reasons why it became so famous. And just to give a quick rundown, Heaven's Gate was founded in 1974, and it was defunct by 1997 by the infamous suicides that took place. It was founded by two members called Bonnie Nettles and Marshall Applewhite, Marshall Applewhite being the primary founder and being the son of a Baptist minister, I believe he was. But in the cult, they went by other names. They went by the UFO2 or T-Doe, as in the musical scale. These kinds of markers is also something you find in a lot of UFO cults. In the beginning, at least Marshall Applewhite was completely obsessed with biblical prophecy, especially regarding the revelation. And he was convinced that he was a witness of the revelation. So, as you can tell, this is starting to sound very much like a doomsday cult, or at least the starting of one.
Yeah.
And after a while, and it was a bit muddled on the details, because there was a lot of different stories, but the conventional story is that Marshall Applewhite had a complete breakdown, ended up in a mental asylum, where he met that other woman, Bonnie Nettles, who ended up telling him that their meeting was not by chance, it was foretold by angels. But these angels were not what he thought they were. These angels were actually extraterrestrials. These were aliens. Immediately after that, they more or less just ran off and started a movement to create their little religious movement. that ended up becoming a very syncretic faith between a lot of different New Age approaches. Christianity, in the form of baptism especially, with a overhanging belief in UFOs and aliens. So it ended up becoming a Christian New Age religion, essentially. And they spent a few years wandering around, gaining a few followers, and then they started getting more aggressive by speaking in public places, and they started running inside churches and telling the people in the church the truth, as they call it. And after a while, they amassed a following of a few hundred people. It was never that super popular, but still, there was several hundreds of people that were willing to listen to what they had to say. Ultimately, about 40 people were left that were hardcore into their beliefs. And part of their doctrines that they practiced was a complete abandonment of everything that was typically human. They went with a monastic lifestyle and isolated themselves from the wider society. And they went completely ascetic in a way, where they, in order to achieve their main goal of reaching the next level, as they called it, to basically become part of the aliens or becoming an alien, which they saw as a superior race, basically gods that are not gods, you had to give up anything that made you human, family, friends, individuality, jobs, money, possessions, whatever you had, essentially. And you were not allowed to partake in anything that was remotely human. Like, your eating of food was supposed to be as basic as possible, same thing with water, and you were not allowed to have any sort of carnal interactions, as was specified. Any sort of markers of sexuality or any sexual activity was completely frowned upon. And all of this was in order to reach what they refer to as the evolutionary level above humans, or Tela for short, which was basically heaven. It was their version of heaven. But it's not a metaphysical or spiritual realm. It's a literal planet somewhere in the galaxy.
Wait. They think heaven is called Nutella?
Tela.
No, Tela. T-E-L-A-H.
Oh, just Tela. I was going to say, I mean, Nutella's
pretty good.
Not
Tela.
Yeah.
Tela, I guess. Tela or T-E-L-A-H. I don't know how they would say it.
It was effectively, it's like the evolutionary learning of something. I can't remember exactly what it means, but effectively what they believe in kind of like this emanationist cosmogony sort of thing, where they believe that you know how like Vedantic and like a lot of monist ascetic kind of view material reality as vulgar or dirty, and they are to ascend, you know, like in Neoplatonism, they believe that they're ascending to God. In, you know, in Hinduism, in some sects, they believe that they are ascending, you know, and in Buddhism, you have this, it's like the same kind of thing, but they made it into a scientific thing. They refer to their bodies as vehicles, that their bodies are just like these material machines, and that they, through their enlightenment, are going to ascend to Tela, which is their heaven on a spaceship, so they can escape Earth before it is recycled.
I was getting to that, because their idea of ascension was the next level. It was literally just called the next level. It's their version of Nirvana, and allegedly you were supposed to either be picked up or enter into a spaceship where they would genetically and biologically and chemically modify you to become a perfect being that only eats sunlight and can frolic around on this paradise world for the rest of eternity.
Yeah.
And that was
those crazy like solar people who think they only need to eat like sunlight and they don't have to eat food? Is that where they come from?
I don't know if that's where they come from, but there's a lot of similarities. Other interesting things that I found about the Heaven's Gate cult as well is that a lot of the nomenclature that they ended up using was actually coming directly from Star Trek. I'm not sure that's a good sign if your religion is based on wording from Star Trek.
Well, beam me up, Scott. Well,
a lot of millennials seem to base their religion on like sci-fi and pop culture. So, I mean, nothing new under the sun. Yeah, right.
The foundational tenet that they worked underneath, though, is that they worshipped what was called the true kingdom of God, because God isn't real in their view of things, in their beliefs. The Christian God, or any God for that matter, is not real. It's an evil alien that is out there to destroy and keep humankind from ascending. These aliens are just dead-ass called Luciferans. They're the Luciferan race, and they're out there to deceive humans. And how they do it is they use holograms, for instance, to make miracles happen, and they use angels that can fly, except they can't fly because they're flying with spaceships. And every single religion, no exceptions, except for theirs, of course, has been corrupted by these evil Luciferian aliens. And now you need to learn their ways in order to enter Heaven's Gate and ascend to the next level. So yeah. You can free that spirit that lives within you, as you are just a mere vessel.
Yeah.
See, I can't help but think that all of these things seem like they're really bad fan fiction, where they've rewritten like their father as like the evil overlord villain in their fantasy world as like a take that dad.
The reasoning for all of this was allegedly because humans were seeded on Earth hundreds of millions of years ago by these aliens so they could be reaped. That's the wording that they used, to be reaped as spiritually enlightened and ascended beings. But only very few humans would be worthy.
Yeah,
the rest will just wander mindlessly in this toxic waste. That's where that whole global warming thing comes in. The world is corrupt. It will die. The atmosphere will become toxic and deadly, and pollution will be everywhere. And everybody will just wander around like nothing's happened and be all unascended and has never reached the next level.
Yeah, which kind of plays into, you'll notice a lot of these cults, they take material scientism and they blend it with a lot of this kind of Kabbalistic, Freemason, secret society, we are the enlightened few kind of rhetoric. And they also, another thing about Heaven's Gate is they had a very perennialist position, which was that all religions have a little bits and pieces that are right, but the rest is corrupted and they know the truth of each one.
Well, just to finish up what I found here, because I found a few guides too. I found especially one on how you could enter the next level. How would you ascend? And you essentially have four methods of doing so. You can be directly picked up by a Teela spaceship, like a UFO, and then you will be processed biologically and chemically to become a perfect being. Alternatively, you can just die naturally, and you will become a next level being by entering another next level being. You can be persecuted, in which case you will be rewarded for your faith and your tenacity, but you have to be persecuted until you die. The last one is a willful exit from the body in a dignified manner. That's taken directly from their website, just like Jesus did. That is the method that he was supposed that he allegedly ascended to become a perfect being. This is literally suicide.
And the comet. I was going to say, it sounds like suicide.
Yes, and that's what they ended up doing.
And the comet too. They believe that because the Halley's comet or whatever comes out in 2,000 years.
They thought it was a spaceship and it was coming to pick them
up.
Well,
they thought that the spaceship was in the tail of the comet.
Yeah, yes. It was hiding, using it for like stealth purposes so that people wouldn't notice it behind the comet.
So they is the purpose of why they don't think the aliens want us to know? Like, the aliens want to pick us up to help us, but they can't know because it's like a special game of hide and seek or some shit.
Well, that would defeat the missionary purpose of what they're doing, though, right? Like, if anyone could just know about it, then they wouldn't be necessary, right?
No, but because the Luciferians were on to their plans.
Oh, boy.
And that the aliens only wanted the purest and most ascended.
Yes, which were them. The 39 people ended up killing themselves, and the two people were left behind in order to wait for the Hail Bob comment again.
What flavor of Kool-Aid did they use for the deed?
They used applesauce.
Oh, really?
And vodka.
Oh, wow.
And barbiturates.
Yes. It was a really peaceful matter because they all drank this toxin and washed it down with vodka, laid down in their beds in their compounds, being all neatly dressed with all nice shoes and
brand new
jewelry and stuff. Yeah, and they just went peacefully. Some of them with bags over their heads, and then they had a purple cloth folded over their heads, and it was all very dignified and nice. It wasn't like, what's that place called?
Jim Jones.
Jonestown. Yeah. It wasn't like that.
Yeah, it was a different thing.
Which made me, honestly made me think this sounded extremely much like a very willing ritual suicide in a...
Well, that all happened when I was a kid, like semi-nearby. And I remember as a kid, everyone was freaked out, not because of like, you know, that they were all dead, but because of the amount of like ritual and like professionalism went into their suicide. And yeah. I mean, the jokes about like the new shoes, like the fresh Nikes and stuff, that was, or the crisp and clean jumpsuit, that was like jokes for going up into middle school.
Yeah. They actually, on their jumpsuits, they made a patch that said, it was like, Earth Exit Team or something like that on this patch. It's like this triangle patch.
Yes. Like, they're like still they're still called the people who made the exit. On the website, which is still up and updated by those two members that were forced to stay behind.
So I want to point out, Andre mentioned it briefly about how they kind of lived an ascetic lifestyle. This is something that you'll see happen a lot in these kinds of cults that have this kind of either emanationist, that reality is an illusion, or that material world is vulgar and they are to be ascended. They go one way or the other, which is this hyper ascetic kind of view, which is in Heaven's Gate cult, I believe it was like 9 of them actually castrated themselves, and they dressed and cut their hair so that there was no differentiation between man and woman.
Including the founder, he ended up castrating himself because allegedly there seems to have been any problems with his own sexuality. He seems to be having a lot of problems with that, and as a result, he wanted others to follow his teachings.
Yeah, there was there's a lot of speculation that he was, you know, Fanuc. But another thing with these people is they have this. This is something you're going to find in all of these cults, is I don't think there's a word for it, so I just call it planetary eschatology, that they literally believe that they're going to go to other planets, and a lot of times when they die or when they ascend or whatever. And a lot of this is actually informed by Mormonism, which I call the proto-UFO cult, because in Mormonism they don't think that you go to heaven. They think that God lives on another planet that kind of exists in this semi-material. They say it's material, but it's kind of not material, and they actually call the planet Kolob. And when you die, you go to a moon of Kolob with the who you are sealed to, which is going to be your wives, and you rule over this moon of Kolob. And they have another planet that they believe in. It's called Olablish or something like that. It's pretty kooky stuff.
Well, you know, when I first saw the, I think it was South Park that did the stuff making fun of Mormons, and I thought, like, oh, they're just ripping into them. But then, like, I went and I Googled it, and I was like, oh, wait, that's actually what Mormons believe. Holy
the
crap.
The entire time they talked about Joseph Smith, they have a disclaimer at the bottom of the screen.
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
This is actually what Mormons believe.
Yeah, I mean, Trey Parker his family is Mormon, too, so I guess he's decently familiar with it personally. But, yeah, I mean, before you even went there, Dave, I was thinking about how I agree with you. Mormonism really is kind of the original UFO cult. And it also kind of highlights that the UFO cult thing, period, is very much an American thing. Although I would disagree a little bit with what Andre said earlier, where he called them like Christian New Age cults and whatnot. I would say that, I mean, they're not even really Christian. They're kind of just revelationists. Like, they really don't care about Christianity. They just care about the revelation, like the apocalypse.
They're basically
they're doomsday cults. Yeah, exactly.
What I meant here is that their entire foundation of their belief is based in Christianity, and they claimed very fervently that they were the true followers of Christ, right. Because the rest, like everybody else, was corrupted Luciferians.
I get that, but I think that their own psychology plays into the idea of them thinking otherwise. You know, like they're not, their personal psychology, even if they think they're Christian, isn't motivated by that actual theism. It's motivated by, you know, like rapturism, by it's death cult stuff. It's like pinnacle doomsday cult. And
there's a good argument that the foundation of Christian belief itself is effectively just a death cult.
Right. I mean, I would probably be inclined to agree, considering the whole Yeah, anyway, that's a different topic. But my point there is that I don't think a lot of them are actual theists beyond just like I mean, even with our own religion, like there's the people that, you know, are just kind of hoping for Ragnarok because everything's corrupted and lame and they want to, you know, be reborn in the new green earth or whatever. And I've always viewed those kinds of psychologies and mentalities as being extremely unhealthy. And if not outwardly like corrupted, that they're kind of a vessel for evil in a sense. Oh. Because like you were saying earlier, I think it was you, Andre, or maybe you, Tristan, but these doomsday cults, these UFO cults always have to have this like browbeating of the audience where it's like, you're bad, everything sucks, everything is corrupted, we need to ascend, we need to leave. There's this like urgency to tell you that everything that you know sucks. It's almost like how Satanists kind of appeal to like, you know, the people that are angry at their parents and angry at having to go to church as a kid because like they thrive on that angst. And these doomsday UFO cults do the same exact thing, but they sprinkle in that, you know, that low church, you know, rapturism with the progressive ideologies of, you know, scientism and, you know, faith and technology to save us and whatnot. So you ultimately get this weird chaos spawn bastard thing of like Protestant, like low church Protestant rapturism, science fiction and genuine like doomsday cultism, and it's kind of really uniquely American, which is interesting.
I would disagree wholeheartedly, but real quick.
I mean, I would also disagree because I looked into a couple of these UFO cults while I was just on Wikipedia just to read a couple of them, and there's a surprising amount of them that are in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, well, they're not from there though. I mean, like Dave was saying, the original one is kind of Mormonism.
Yeah. You have the universe people from the Czech Republic. You have esoteric Hitlerism, which they literally believe.
But Mormonism predates Hitler.
I'm just saying like the origin.
Blavatsky, Helena Blavatsky.
Well, yeah, she's also later than that too, though. And Blavatsky is a theosophist.
The theological origins of the like logical positivism was an American philosophy.
Yeah.
And I see how the origins of this thought paradigm is strictly American, but I think it's been exported so abroad in the globalized setting that
we export everything, but I mean that like its foundations they're fundamentally American because it requires that fusion of like low church kind of lack of rules splinter to hell and back and like with a freedom to kind of not have any oversight and be as ridiculous as you want.
This ties into what I, you know, going back to Bjorn in the chat says all these weirdo cultists do seem to have this strange seem strange, but just think we have an entire culture based around chopping off your own genitals right now. This is true. You're making a good point, Mr. Bjorn, because I would put all of these things under the umbrella of New Ageism, because a lot of these remember I was talking about how they get into this asceticism because material reality is no good or it's completely an illusion. A lot of these UFO cults will also go the other way and say that pleasure and earthly pleasure mean nothing and they're just go wild. So then you end up with things like Aurelianism, where they have like, you know, orgies, like bisexual orgies and sex changes and that gender and biological realities don't matter. And I would like to point out that under this umbrella that you do have thinkers and writers that people in our circles really like that actually say these same kind of things. For example, Julius Evola said that he believes in spiritual transgender thing, like that people could be spiritually transgender. He said that the male sex drive is one of the greatest evils of the material world. Like these are all of these things under this umbrella are being informed by New Ageism and by these kinds of ideas. And these also share this idea of we are the enlightened elite, we are the educated elite. And a lot of these UFO cults will brand themselves, for example, what are they called? Aetherius Society. Call themselves Aetherius Society. They're an academic society. Unarius, they call themselves the academic Academy of Science. You know, a lot of these, they believe that they are educating people. And what does this sound like? What do modern progressives and liberals believe? They believe that if they can just pump as much money into the education system that their political opponents aren't political opponents, they're just unenlightened, they're just uneducated. That those who hold degrees in these institutions of education are the enlightened, are the highest, that they are the intelligence. Valencia. There's a lot that there's so many. You know, it's like you're looking at one of them FBI charts with all the evidence, and they have the strings going across. These things are all connected under the umbrella of New Ageism.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's all post-Enlightenment, post-industrial thought commingled. Right? I mean, me and Tristan kind of have the meme of like saying everything is liberalism. But I mean, it kind of is. I mean, if it's not traditionally based like civic structure or theism, it more or less is New Age stuff.
Yeah. Siddharth says liberalism is the most popular cult now. Celebrity gods and feel-goodism is the base theology. Yeah, I would go back further than liberalism. I would say that these things are all informed by Kabbalah. I would say that these things are a direct descendant of Kabbalah, whether you're talking about the Victorian era esotericism, whether you're talking about modern liberalism, whether we're talking about these UFO cults, whether we're talking about scientism, Scientology, whether we're talking about these New Age mega church Christian sects, Wicca, which, by the way, Gerald Gardner was a Thelemite, the guy that created Wicca. These things are all interconnected, and they have the same kind of ideas. We must ascend from this world. Reality doesn't matter. These things all have informed postmodernism as well. This idea of apotheosis, these ideas of revolution, and these things all come from, and Tristan touched on it before, about how they believe that the old style of the world was gone beyond recognition, except I would push the timeline back into some of these first revolutionary ideas. You know, these first revolutionary ideas, which started with Hermeticism and started with, you know, these kinds of mystery cults and stuff. These were the first New Ageisms, and they kind of evolved over the next, like, 2,000 years. And what are we talking about when we talk about New Ageism? New Ageism literally means they want a new age. It is a revolutionary ideology. The idea of the old, ancient, traditional institutions must be destroyed, and therefore we bring about this new age utopia. And utopianism is a reoccurring theme across all of these ideologies, whether you're talking about transhumanism with people that want to just become AI units or whatever, to you know, the Heaven's Gate cult, to Raelians, to Scientology, to Mormonism, to like all of these different ideologies, even just basic bitch progressivism, believe that they are building a utopia. That's what all these things all have commonalities, and we can go through all the commonalities. But before we start running out of time, Mr. Wolfman, you wanted to talk about a UFO cult as well.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really have an actual name. It was just kind of a local fixation. Out in like Landers, California, which is kind of already an area known for UFO sightings, and honestly, probably because there's a lot of military air bases nearby. But that being said, a lot of the people that live there know the difference between a helicopter or a military plane and like a saucer that moves vertically, like at extreme angles and stuff like that. But so a bit of backstory is that there was this guy named George Van Tassel who was a quote-unquote contactee, which is, you know, someone who's been visited by aliens. And he was also a ufologist and an author. But he was originally an airline mechanic, or not an airline, but an airplane mechanic that was from Ohio. And because California was booming with the airline industry in the like the 40s and 30s and whatnot, he moved out there to get involved in that. While he was out there, and it was during like the early 40s, so like the World War II era, he met a guy whose name was Franz Kritzter, and who is a German. And there's a big boulder there. It's called just Giant Rock. It's out in the Mojave, again, near Landers. But the Indians that used to live there considered the Giant Rock, you know, sacred, a kind of, you know, monument of sorts. So this German guy, Kritzer, he would meditate under this rock because he was like a prospector trying to make his fortune. And he would meditate under this rock and got the idea to like do different things around it, like digging out certain holes and like making adjustments to the nearby area, all for some purpose that he didn't really share with anyone except for Van Tassel. The same guy was later purported to be a spy for the German government during World War II. So the cops came to, you know, arrest him, and he blew himself up with dynamite. So kind of weird. Yeah. But so because of Tassel's association with him, he kind of got on that view that there was something special about the rock, and that, you know, he should investigate it. He should invest in it, really. So after he found out Kritzer died, Van Tassel applied for the lease of the property. And there's like a small airport nearby that he kind of got retrofitted and up and running. He built like an inn, a gas station. Like he pretty much built a little town kind of around this area. But that itself wasn't weird. What was weird is that in the 1950s, he claimed that aliens from Venus visited him and expressed like disappointment in humanity and like civilization because it was, you know, prone to war and disease and, you know, all the, like we've been talking about, all the new age evils that, you know, people want to ascend to escape from. So Tassel claims that these aliens were like beings of healing and peace and, you know, that whole business, and that they instructed him to build a building with the certain dimensions and properties that would enable them to like heal people with sound. Van Tassel was, to all intents and purposes, he didn't seem like a really weird guy. He was just kind of a mechanic that had an interest in, you know, machinery and whatnot. But moving to this area where this rock was and talking to this German guy really seems to have changed him quite a bit, to the point where he became, like I said, a contactee, you know, having visions from aliens from Venus telling him how to build a structure that would heal people so that people could have peace on Earth and whatnot. He ended up dying of a heart attack in the 70s. And after he died, as my memory recalls it, a bunch of sisters or a trio of sisters bought the property. And because it had been an unofficial gathering site for like UFO people for years at that point, they kind of catered to that. And this is why I mean, I don't believe any of it to begin with, but I know that it's a load of crap because it just reeks of, you know, trying to, you know, make money off tourists and whatnot, because the Integratron, as it's called, is supposedly like perfectly acoustic. And the sisters started the business of basically bringing in the UFO people by like kind of throwing festivals and whatnot in the area for them to all show up to, but then also offering like crystal sound healing baths inspired by aliens from Venus that want to heal humans and whatnot. And from what I understand, you basically just lay on the floor in the middle chamber and they put crystals around you and like patterns and you just lay there and that heals you or something. I've also heard rumors, though I couldn't, you know, verify them or whatever. I couldn't say that they're true or not. I've heard rumors that it's kind of like a sex cult thing too. Like all these UFO people go there for like alien sound baths and also to like have orgies and stuff, because it's
80% of the time it's definitely a sex cult.
Well, yeah, and that's like something too that's reoccurring. Like there's always a sexual like element to this, either, you know, kind of like what Andre was talking about earlier, where they're literally castrating themselves and cutting their hair so they can't tell the difference in gender, or it's like this straight up, yeah, the aliens talk to me, so ladies, come on over sort of thing. And yeah, that in general is just kind of a weird, well, maybe it's not weird, but it's definitely really common to all these cults and stuff. And the fact that this particular location is just kind of out in the desert in California, like there's something about the desert that just draws in like all the hippie weirdo, like UFO sex people, which is regrettable. But like, it's like the same stuff you'd see in like Roswell, where all these like kind of weirdos get together and do this sort of thing. But the thing about Tassel's story is that his encounter, again, I don't believe him, but a lot of these alien encounters, including his, they really do sound like visitations from like different spirits and stuff, as we would call them. And I mean, I know it's not really the nature of the show tonight, but I really almost kind of don't believe in aliens and UFOs as we like think of them in a sci-fi way. To me, based on, you know, the vast physical distances of the universe and the logistical problems therein, I almost kind of have more of the, I guess, like 40K kind of view, in the sense that, like, quote unquote, aliens might as well be equated with like demons or spirits, because these are probably things that don't operate on the same laws of physics that we do.
And if you want to hear their entire theories about aliens, you can go sign up at Patreon and go listen to their alien episode where they talk about theories about aliens and extraterrestrials and everything like that. But unfortunately, Mr. Ian, we are running out of time. So I wanted to give like a quick overview of what I have What I besides, and White Healing said something in the chat. He said that sound healing is real. That's what's kind of crazy about these UFO cults and a lot of these scientism cults is they blend things that are true, right? You know, their space is real. Like, you know, they say things that are real and they mix it together with this weird syncretism of New Age esotericism and like this is bizarre syncretism they have going on. Neo-Vedantic and Neoplatonic ideas mixed with, you know, liberalism and scientism and rationalism. It's just like this really crazy, you know, mix. So I'm not saying that sound healing is not real. I don't know if it's real, but I mean, I guess it could be real. I mean, we could talk about, but these are, I'm going to kind of go through a list of what I have found, I'm not an expert or anything, but just from doing a few days of research into these different UFO cults, I didn't have to, unfortunately, time to go into the ones I wanted to talk about, the Vril Society. And I brought up a pretty crazy one called Universal Medicine, which is actually, it's like kind of in American Australia. It was created by a guy named Serge Ben-Hayen, and he has this same kind of thing that he is the reborn, he is the reincarnation of Jesus and Leonardo da Vinci, and that he was visited by these angels, or has he described 9-foot alien beings, and they uploaded stuff into his brain, and he's a healer and all. And pretty much what he does is he just tricks old ladies into signing their wills over to him and gets the women into these dark rooms and molests them. He's a real freakazoid, a real pervert. But he's another example. But I kind of wanted to go through some bullet points of what I noticed is commonality between not all, but many of these things. And I want to go through and I want to ask these guys what they think about my thesis here. So I've said this many, many times already in the show. Ascension, apotheosis, enlightenment. This idea to ascend a vulgar material, or perhaps a to ascend from a world that is about to be destroyed, which goes into the next point, which is utopianism or doomsday. And a lot of this stuff is like, you know, global warming, pollution, things that are already in the zeitgeist of like progressive religion, right? Of the world religion of liberalism. So utopianism and doomsaying. And then I'll also a mix of materialism and the idea of kind of like a Platonic emanationist position, where that material reality is either an illusion, a hologram, not real, or it's just bad and you need to escape it and ascend to this alien utopia kind of thing. Another thing was a complete rejection of biological realities, which is what we found in Heaven's Gate with their castration and androgyny and stuff like that, the Raelianism with their orgies and hedonism, and then also I didn't get a chance to talk about it, but this cult called Universal Medicine, this guy believes that he teaches what he calls hermaphrodite orgasms or double orgasm. He believes that the highest enlightenment, his version of ascension, is when you become both male and female. And when you have, you know, your orgasm, you experience both the male and female orgasm at the same time. And that is like a form of ascension. And Aleister Crowley actually had something pretty similar that he said. I think he probably lifted it directly from Aleister Crowley. And speaking of being visited by aliens, a lot of these cult leaders believe that they have revealed truth from aliens and that they are prophets, or that those above them are prophets, like L. Ron Hubbard, Joseph Smith, you know, the guy from the Raelians who called himself Rael. You know, we talked about Marshall Applewhite from the Heaven's Gate cult, a lot of these people, in which, by the way, another thing that I noticed, this isn't going to go into this list, but tons of these cult leaders and then cult leaders in general have what the Japanese call senpaku eyes. Senpaku means like three whites. And what the Japanese believe that if you had like, you know, too much space around your eye on the bottom or the top, that signified mental disease, like you weren't right in the head, or it could also mean that you were homosexual, which, you know, is there a difference? But
is that like the shark eyes that like serial killers are talked about having?
Yes.
Like,
yes, okay. Or wolf eyes. They've I believe I read in like one of the sagas, a crazy guy was described, I believe they said Wargulger, which is like wolf eyes. So
that can also mean like a fierce gaze, like looking at someone like that you intend to kill. But yeah, definitely what you're talking about.
So the Japanese put a lot of stock in this, and they would actually like not lift people up to positions, and they would be untrusting of people when they had senpaku eyes because they believed that you weren't right in the head or you were demonic or something like that. So a lot of these cult leaders, from Charles Manson to Jim Jones, you know, Applewhite is crazy. He's got the textbook senpaku eyes. Go watch his like initiation video where his eyes are all bugged out and everything. It's pretty creepy looking. Next up, I have a lot of times they'll have alternative history, which is kind of like, this is directly lifted from Blavatsky. You know, a group called the Order of the Solar Temple believed that when they died, they would go back to Atlantis. What are they called? Unarius Academy of Science. They actually have a lady that they believed that was like part of their cult, and she died in like 1990 something. She said she was an archangel Uriel, and she lived on Atlantis. And a lot of these people, but I'm not saying, you guys know me, I like to talk about Atlantis and Hyperborea and stuff like that. But these people, I'm just pointing out that alternative history and occultism. And this kind of like Blavatsky inspired idea of alternative history is a reoccurring theme in these UFO cults. Another one is they believe in, this goes into omniism and then also liberalism too, this idea of universal or perennial or even just straight up subjective truth. And this leads to this very disjointed syncretism. This disjointed syncretism of like, they have like all of these different, they'll believe like Jesus and Buddha and like all these people are clones of aliens, which is exactly what the Raelians believe. The worship of science and inventors. Back to the Unarius Academy of Science, they have they believe that Nikola Tesla, for example, was a saint. They have made him a saint. Yeah, I mentioned before.
Oh, what,
go ahead.
The Integratron I mentioned earlier. I forgot to. One of the design features was inspired by Tesla, and he claimed that the aliens from Venus knew Tesla, and he was the last person that they, you know, gave revelation to, so that Tesla's designs were from aliens from Venus.
Yeah, that sounds like textbook UFO cult stuff. I mentioned earlier planetary eschatology, what I call it, the idea of your soul, your spirit, or your consciousness, which is another thing that I pointed out. They have like these very, you know, this goes into scientism as well. Instead of saying that they have a soul, they will say that they are beings of energy or vibration, or they're a pure consciousness, like Andre was talking about earlier with Heaven's Gate, how their consciousness reaches Tila. They escape material world and go to another thing. They kind of just replace the idea of soul and metaphysical ontology with, you know, science-y sounding things. Another thing, so they have this planetary eschatology, and this is, like I said, it really started from what I could find with Mormonism, believing that you go to the planet Kolob when you die, which is God's planet, and he lives there, and he's an alien, and all this kind of stuff. And then also, like, Heaven's Gate cult, where they go to this other planet, and tons of them have this idea of the afterlife is this utopian planet, which also ties into their utopianism. And then, obviously, the idea of the higher learning, the idea of they are the holders of this enlightened truth, that they are a secret society, these kinds of things, which a lot of it is also borrowed from esotericism and things like Freemasonry and you know, these secret societies, mystery cults, where they claim to have this secret knowledge and stuff like that. This is another reoccurring theme that they have borrowed from esotericism. And the final thing that I have written down is literally inspiration from existing science fiction. You know, Andre mentioned earlier about Heaven's Gate literally lifted things from Star Trek. A lot of these groups borrow from science fiction. L. Ron Hubbard, who started the Church of Scientology, was a science fiction writer. And then even Joseph Smith and the early founders of the Mormon Church were inspired by the science fiction writers of their time. It's weird to think that science fiction goes back that far. But guys like Samuel Butler, Jules Verne, there were authors around that time that were starting to create science fiction, and Joseph Smith literally lifted a lot of this, and this is found in their planetary eschatology, where they believe that you go to a celestial, telestial, or terrestrial realm. You have these different realms that you go to, and these are all different planets and all of this kind of stuff. It's really, really crazy. So that is kind of my list of the markers and commonalities that I identified between this bizarre amalgamation, this syncretism that we call UFO cults. So I want to go down the line. And Bjorn says, utopianism is always a lie. There's only struggle and those strong enough to endure it. I would halfway agree with that in the Germanic spirituality, we understand that the cycle is an ongoing struggle. We don't believe in things like apotheosis and ascension. We think that we're in the cycle forever. There's no escape. But we argue that that's a good thing. And that's a whole another discussion. And obviously, we also believe in afterlife. But I want to go down the line here and ask these guys what they think of what I have marked as commonalities between the things. And I want to start with Mr. Tristan.
Well, the only thing I really would disagree here is that you generally say that these people have a marked preference for, like, a belief in rationalistic, like a Maya perspective of a... almost like what we would call Advaita Vedanta. Like they have this Hindu position where they believe they want to transcend out of the mortal realm into like a divine realm, because the mortal realm is either corrupt or it's not real. I don't think that a lot of these people actually do believe some of these. Like some of them, of course, do. But
I mean, some of them kill themselves. You know what I mean?
Right. But that's most of these people seem to have a belief that's more like... a hyper-materialist position that they've rationalized themselves into thinking that they're not going to transfer into like a rational realm or a spiritual realm. They're just escaping our physical planet via technology. And that's how they're doing it via death. Like it's kind of similar, but I think they've actually rationalized it in a hyper-materialist way that it gels a lot better with their belief in like the saving power of technology and scientism rather than it is a traditional religious perspective of like, you know, like you would see in like Hinduism or Buddhism or something like that.
So I agree with you, actually. I agree with you. I was just pointing out that the function and that it's informed by those things. That's kind of what I'm trying to point out.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And Mr. Andre, what do you think about, do you think, a lot of this, obviously, you know, you looked in the Heaven's Gate, a lot of this was present in the Heaven's Gate, but what do you think about my list of commonalities that I found among these UFO cults?
Honestly, I think you found quite a bit of the common denominators here. If anything, I would just add to, like, a few of them.
Anything off the top of your head?
You mentioned this fact with like how they were obsessed with like science and scientism almost. And a part of that, a more like a specific part, is that they are often obsessed with physical signs and omens, kind of like you see in Heaven's Gate with their absolute obsession with the Hale-Bopp comet. And you see this a lot where they focus tremendously on something that people can spot, something that people can see, something that they can experience themselves, instead of something that's more abstract. And the second, I guess, is just be somewhat wary of any sort of religion that offers you upfront the access to hidden, forbidden, and secret knowledge to how things work.
Yeah, I would actually really agree with that. That any sort of, you know, what claims to be the spiritual philosophy that says that they hold the secret knowledge and they can inform you and let you in on this secret club, and that if you know this, you will ascend above everybody else and escape. And it's be wary of that. Be wary of that, because 9 times out of 10, it's something that could be dangerous. Or at least just something that is not healthy to believe in and put your energy in. And Mr. Wolfman, what do you think about my list of commonalities? Do you think your regional UFO cult falls into that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the commonalities you listed, but the only one I would add too that I kind of already briefly mentioned is the marketing angle. There's always something to sell, yeah. And even if it's not like in a for-profit material kind of way, like, you know, to be kind of dramatic and poetic, your soul is for sale. And they're like the kind of people that run these cults or that get these kinds of ideas, they're kind of just con artists inherently. Like they have the same psychological and mental profile that a con artist does.
Yeah, and that's actually one thing I forgot to mention was the overwhelming majority of UFO cults and cults in general start out as a business. They start out as a business. Heaven's Gate started out as they had what was called it's called like Higher Source or something like that. It was some sort of computer thing because that's when the internet was coming about.
They're usually like publishing companies and stuff like that. That like, you know, their membership dues start to become something else. You know.
Yeah. Universal Medicine. They started out as this new agey, goofy, like self-help group. You have the Nexium cult. They started out as this goofy self-help group. There's just so many of these that started as they have this front of a business, and then they evolve into these other things. Who is the Japanese guy that was with the Tokyo bombings and everything like that? He started out as a yoga instructor. You know what I mean? There's so many of these cults, it's specifically UFO cults, that start out as a business that kind of funds their things, and they just derail into cultism. So that's going to be it for tonight, folks. I hope you guys liked the episode. Maybe we'll do more stuff like this. Maybe we'll do a part two, because I still have like a whole nother page of notes that I want to go over and talk to you guys about with this UFO cult stuff and scientism and how it blends together. The most fascinating thing for me was how it kind of blended like functions of religion, but they're also materialist, but then they have kind of these apologetics that are tied to other religious philosophies, and then it all goes in with New Ageism and all this. It's really, really crazy and bizarre and actually really sad and kind of scary, a lot of this stuff. I watched the entirety of all of the interviews that of the Heaven's Gate cult, of them before they killed themselves. I watched interviews with people from these other cults, and it's just really, really sad what happens and how predatory some of these psychopaths that create these cults are. It's pretty crazy stuff, very fascinating. And maybe we'll do a part two and branch out into more stuff. But that's it for tonight, folks. We will see you on Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. If you like the Bog, you support the Bog, make sure you go to patreon.com/the Bog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. And you get all of our exclusive content, all of our shows in audio and your RSS feed, so you can listen to on your commutes, at gym, at work, or wherever. So patreon.com/the Bog. Go sign up. Help us keep the lights on. You will support the Bog another way. Make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/Bog shop and pick up some sweet Bog merch. Man, we got hats, we got shirts, we got backpacks, we got all that kind of stuff. Good stuff too. American made, not cheap Chinese crap. Good stuff. shop.spreadshirt.com/Bog shop. If you want to support a friend of ours, make sure you go to facebook.com/IronAgeJyotish and check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. Oh, man, is that stuff cool. I'm telling you, another rabbit hole to go down and start researching. facebook.com/IronAgeJyotish and check him out. If you decide to get a reading, make sure to tell him Big Dave sent you. Tell him Big Dave sent you. But like always, we are going to wrap this show up. I'm going to raise the horn. I got the horn right here to our most exalted patrons, and that is House Allen. That is Mr. Corey and our very own Andre. Many special thanks to them for helping to continue growing the show and supporting the show and helping us grow and evolve and bring more awesome content to you guys. So, also hail to those guys, and many hails and many blessings to each and every one of you Bog Lords that are tuning in tonight. I'll see you guys next time, next Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern, right here. I'll check you guys out next time. Hail.